This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio. Theatre, film, TV and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hi, Warren. I'm just sitting here reflecting on Ripley and thinking, do you think that maybe everyone is a villain in somebody else's story?
Oh, that's a really... I like this. Yes, maybe we are. Is everyone a villain in someone else's story?
Yes. Are you a villain in someone else's story?
Many, I reckon. Are you?
All your ex...
I feel like villain... Is villain... villain doesn't... Does villain have a strength to it as a word? Or, I don't know. I mean, you just put X's in my mind. I'm sure I'm not just a villain. I don't know, but... What about you?
I'm a theatre critic, so I probably am a villain in lots of people's minds.
When you go to the theatre, and I remember we went to a show with you in Sydney once, and that was so much fun. And the thing I noticed, Susie, everyone was looking at you, and they were all sort of, hi, Susie, as though we better be in her good books. Is it like that?
It is a bit like that. I think over time... You learn to be a bit warmer with people. In the start, I thought that I had to be quite removed from them and not be kind of too friendly with them. But, you know, I've done this for like 12, 13 years now, so it's very hard to pretend not to be friends with people. And I find that it's actually quite healthy to kind of try to cultivate friendships. You know, you don't have to be very close with everyone, but I think it's better than kind of walking around looking like you're being very intimidating. And that was never my design. Mm. But and then you kind of understand that people do impose those ideas on you, that they think that you're that person who's judging them constantly, where in fact I'm only judging their work, you know, for a couple of hours. It's not like I'm doing that all the time.
And it is their work.
But, you know, in relation to the story today, the idea of a villain is very interesting.
I've got one other question, though, because I feel like this is almost related, because we are going to be talking about, I suppose, the movie itself. But when you are reviewing, how do people react when you give a bad review? Because, do you feel conflicted? Like, if you think, I really like this person, but it was just not good. What happens then?
Look, everyone says that I'm very kind with my reviews, that I tend to sort of be very gentle, but be as precise I can when I'm making negative criticism. Mm. And I guess you hit the right balance when people tell you that you are very kind when they're talking about other people's work. But when they're talking about their own work, they don't think you're particularly kind. So I think that's a good balance there.
Okay, well, let's hear your review. We are talking about the series Ripley. I said movie before incorrectly. It is on Netflix. It's streaming now. Susie, before you do give us your review, I was feeling so good because I've been watching it and I got through the whole lot and I think I've got about half an hour.
I know.
And I thought, I'm going to get a gold stamp from Susie Rong or an elephant stamp or something. And I had half an hour left to watch today and I got so busy. I haven't seen the last half hour of episode 8. There are 8 episodes to this. So we'll talk about that a little later. But before we do, give us your review on Ripley on Netflix.
It was 1955 when American novelist Patricia Highsmith published the first 5 novels featuring the character Tom Ripley. It was a difficult time, of course, for all queers. So even though Highsmith was herself a lesbian, it was highly unlikely that she could get away with creating a gay character who was out, proud, and an exemplary specimen of queerness. Instead, what we have is a con man, someone who not only commits fraud, but as we see in the Netflix series, Ripley, also a murderer, who goes to great lengths to get ahead in life. It is open to debate why these stories about a queer villain have become so successful and persistently popular, even now almost 70 years after his debut. Is it because there are people who like seeing gay men portrayed as evil creatures that align with old-school homophobic ideas? Or is it because Tom Ripley represents a kind of revenge narrative that underdogs and outcasts might relish observing, as he sneaks his way into the upper class and takes what he's been deprived. Indeed, there is a lot to enjoy in this new series, no matter your perspective. The storytelling is incredibly enjoyable. Over a generous 8 episodes, we delve deep into this fascinating character, performed exquisitely by Andrew Scott, a real-life gay actor demonstrating the depth of nuance he can bring to a gay role that we have rarely have ever seen before, especially when most have been played by straight people. Ripley is quite possibly one of the most beautiful TV shows ever filmed. It is visually stunning, with old Italy looking resplendent in every frame. Shot entirely in black and white, the imagery is breathtaking for the whole duration. But more than that, as a work of fiction, there is never a dull moment. Even during extended sequences where Ripley is on his own doing crime with no one to speak to, we are mesmerized by the film language being deployed, and I found myself just luxuriating in something so completely entrancing and satisfying. It works marvelously as a psychological thriller, but it is also undoubtedly arty, which only scores extra points from me. Warren, were you ready for a gay baddie on your television?
Do you know what's really interesting? I actually watched, I loved it. I absolutely loved it, Susie. A baddie, yes. I was on the edge of my seat to the point where I almost thought, I can't watch this. I don't want to know what happens. Like, I was so engrossed in the whole series. But I actually wasn't sure that he was gay or not. I didn't get that in it. And I know people do portray gay people as villains, and that was the way it was done. We could never just be ourselves and achieving things and wonderful people. But, I mean, it wasn't obvious to me, and I was questioning it throughout. I was going, is he gay? Is he into Dickie? Or is he not gay? And did Susie just pick this because it was a really good thing to watch and there's no link to it? But I wasn't sure that he was too. I'm being totally honest with you, and maybe that is the most ridiculous thing everyone's heard about this, but I've never heard of Ripley before. I hadn't watched the movie before, and I'm so glad I hadn't, and I went fresh into this series. Was it obvious to you?
I think from back in the day, the only way that you can portray gay characters was like that. That it was completely ambiguous. I don't think in America that at that time you could be any more explicit with someone's sexuality if they were not straight. There was a scene where he talks about this more flamboyant gay man that they do have, they had encountered, and he was full of disdain, talking about, you know, how this person is so, like, so awful because he was this and that and this and that. And the performance from Andrew Scott was so great, because it became a key moment of understanding why this person it has no morals, you know? And I think, and we understand as queer people that self-hate can very easily become part of how we navigate the world, because people teach us these values and then we often ingest them and take them as our own, and there's a process of unlearning them. But because it's 1955, they don't kind of have the opportunity to unlearn those things. And you were saying as well, like, why are, you know, we weren't able to see them living their best lives, being the best gay people that could be. But the truth is that there are no opportunities, right? Like, he has a dreams that everyone has, but, like, what kind of opportunities does he have? He didn't have it, and I think that was pretty much the point of it. And then the great thing was this person, this Dickie that, you know, that he conned, was I think quite purposefully portrayed as being very, very wealthy, you know, filthy rich, but no talent, right? So it's someone that he could very easily take the place of, that he didn't get to that place by working hard or anything. He was just simply there because he was born into the right family. I just think that it's such a masterful piece of work, but it does take quite a lot of maturity to kind of figure things out. And I think that's the beauty of it being an 8-hour work.
You know what? The Italian Department of Tourism, whatever their appropriate title is, would be loving this series, because I loved watching it. I loved seeing Italy and some of the places that I've been to, and seeing them, you know, back in 1955, or recreated as 1955, was just absolutely brilliant. It made me think, I feel like I need another trip to Italy. It's been years since I've been there. Beautiful. Loved it. Loved Napoli. Loved the whole lot. I think the cinematography is amazing. You know what I really love about it, Susie? The black and white. I mean, how rare is it to see something produced in black and white? And the thing I loved about it while I was watching it, I thought, why are they producing this in black and white? Yes, it's back in the 50s, but why black and white? And I was watching it and I thought, it's so nice to see all this violence without the red blood coming out, you know? And it left a lot to our imagination to fill in the colour. And also, we focused on, you know, the shade and the light and all this sort of stuff of the movie. I haven't done that before. I was sitting there enjoying it. It was like being in a gallery for me.
That's so wonderful that you picked up on that. I think that aside from the obvious sort of narrative of the story, I think a lot of it is about beauty. It's about art. You know, there's a lot of talk about Caravaggio, this kind of like, you know, painter from way back. And, you know, whether it is a case of Dickie and Tom and their relationship with art, because both of them sort of paint, but are really terrible painters. And in the background, they talk about Caravaggio and, you know, maybe there is an aspiration there. But clearly for me, I think you can see the filmmaker. So the person, oh shit. I should have written the name down. I don't remember the name. Sorry. But the filmmaker obviously has such an admiration for kind of visual beauty. And, you know, just this 8 hours of the filmmaker creating these beautiful imagery. You know, when I first started watching it and I thought, this is really ballsy. 8 hours of black and white. And so many scenes where they're just speaking Italian, or so many scenes where no one's speaking. And I'm thinking, I'm sure I'm going to fall asleep at some stage. And no, I had to turn it off at like 1 a.m. two nights ago. I couldn't believe how engrossing the thing was. And it had, you know, on the surface, it just looks like it wasn't going to work, but it works so incredibly well.
I agree with you 100%. It reminded me, very early, like the first couple of years of my life, we had the old black and white television, and I suppose I do remember it in some ways, but it was, you know, it was considered standard. I mean, it's all we had. And then my dad was a really early adopter of technology, which is one of the things that I love about him. And as soon as colour was available, we had it in the house, and it was very, very exciting. So, you know, we've all had, I suppose, the colour for most of our lives now, and it was just really nice. You need to go and see Ripley on Netflix to understand what we're talking about. It was just beautiful to sit there, and it was comforting on the eye. It wasn't difficult. It wasn't busy. It was just so pleasurable to watch. I feel like you could almost turn the sound off and watch the movie and still potentially enjoy it.
That makes me think, you know, maybe the beauty is so important in us watching the story because you don't want to hate Ripley. The work, even though he's doing terrible things from the start to the end, he's not a good person in one moment. But because the viewing experience is so pleasurable, you never think about disliking him. Mm. Or maybe because we are queer people, so we kind of understand where he's coming from. But maybe that it is. That's what the black and white is about. The beauty. I think that's what the beauty of the film is about. And you know, I feel like this is a very rare instance of modern usage of black and white film that isn't about nostalgia. I never felt like it was kind of trying to be in a style from the past. I feel like it's a very fresh kind of filmmaking. I didn't feel like it was trying to recreate something from the past, even though it looks like a black and white film about a story from the 55. It just never felt like, oh, let's make it feel a little bit oldie worldy. Like the music clearly was never old film. I just felt like it was all so strangely, unexpectedly modern, even though it was all black and white and sharp suits.
And the music was in Italian, and I really enjoyed listening to it. And you know, there's a couple of live performances in there, I suppose, you know, where they're eating and there's a performance. I really enjoyed watching them. I thought it was great. It's interesting because I'm glad you said we sort of didn't want Ripley to be found out, because I was feeling that way, Susie, and I wasn't sure why, and I had that cognitive dissonance happening in my head where I'm thinking, he's such a horrible man in what he's doing, but I don't want him to get caught. Like, I was barracking for him throughout it, and I felt guilty doing it, but that's what it did to me. It had me thinking, I don't want him to get caught. He's so successful and so good at what he's doing. And every time, you know, something would happen, oh my goodness, they're going to find out. I almost thought, I have to turn it off. I need to go and eat something or wash the dishes or do some work or something like that. I couldn't bear the thought that it was going to end badly. And I haven't seen the ending, Susie. Don't spoil it for me. Is the ending good?
Beautiful.
Okay.
Just beautiful. And like, I don't know the books, but I'm like hoping for a second season. I just can't get enough of it, honestly.
I love it too. Marge, I don't know who the actor was, Marge, but she was good too. I mean, she just kept that sort of deadpan face the whole time. And how good's that? She was great.
That's interesting because she's like a woman writer, and the Patricia Highsmith, who wrote these novels, is a woman writer. So for a while I was thinking, So is she putting herself in the place of Marge? And then I suddenly thought, you know what? It's likely that she is queer herself. So I Googled and I found that Patricia Highsmith was a lesbian. So half of her is with Tom and half of her is with Marge, you know, I think. So it's got so much depth and nuance to the storytelling, which is why I think for you and I, you know, we just kind of found ourselves just completely fascinated, right? There seems to be so much to look at. And, you know, the thing about not hating Tom, also he's not done anything. Well, he's done terrible things, but from a storytelling point, he's not done anything to anyone that you like, right? The people that he's done terrible things to are people that you don't care for.
That's
part of the device. Yeah.
C has just texted in saying, recommended viewing. It's kind of a version of Call Me By Your Name. It's been quite some time since we've done a cis film. That's true, but... That's true. And also says, also speaking of queer villains, I watched The Killing of Sister George, 1960s British lesbian film on YouTube. It was pretty warped, but an amazing snapshot of time and perception, worthwhile viewing. That is from Colette. I loved it. It is called Ripley. It's on Netflix. You can catch it now. I'm going to watch the ending tonight, which means I get to eat another bowl of ice cream, Susie. Or another tub.
And I'll text you. I think I'll text you about 9:30 to see how you feel.
Okay, make it a little bit later. What's our homework for next week?
It is going to be Warren's choice next week. I'm putting the blame on you. Check out White Fever. White Fever on ABC iView. I haven't seen it. I don't know. A new series about an Asian woman who has a thing for hairy white men. Lots to talk about, I'm sure, when I see you next Tuesday.
Thank you, Susie. See you then.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.